Cassette number 18, side 1, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, continuing section 2, division D, Thought and Fire Elementals, on page 749. Footnote. Discipleship or Chelaship. The ancient mysteries were but a school of spiritual training and perfection in true wisdom. That the preliminary qualification was the purification of the heart from all sensual passions and false preconceptions. That, while the hand of the master might lead the neophyte through the dangers of the stage where, like the infant, he could not walk alone, he was obliged in the higher paths to learn to guide and guard himself, as the adult man has to do in ordinary life. That the ultimate goal was the expansion of the self into infinite existence and potentialities. And lastly, that however the initial forms and ceremonies may have differed in appearance, an identical aim was in view. From the Theosophist, Volume 9, page 246. The pure heart and clean mind alone permit one to attain salvation. This was his doctrine. So likewise is it taught in the Aryan Mahabharata, which says, quote, those high-souled persons that do not commit sins in word, deed, heart, and soul are said to undergo ascetic austerities, and not that they suffer their bodies to be wasted by fasts and penances. He that hath no feeling of kindness for relatives cannot be free from sin, even if his body be pure. That hard-heartedness of his is the enemy of his asceticism. Asceticism, again, is not mere abstinence from the pleasures of the world. He that is always pure and decked with virtues, he that practices kindness all his life, is a Muni, even though he lead a domestic life. From the Theosophist, Volume 13, page 259. Return to text, page 750. What occurs on lower planes is but a reflection of higher processes, and in this thought may lie illumination. A man is a force center, either for his ego when sufficiently evolved, or via his ego of his group force. When very highly developed, he can consciously be overshadowed by an exponent of a different type of force, which blends with his group or ray force and produces significant results in his life on earth. Again, when an ego is highly evolved, he may choose, during any particular incarnation, to work paramountly through any one principle among the lower four. When this is the case, the man's life on earth is significantly that of an embodied principle. He seems to strike one note and to sound out one tone. His work is clearly to be seen along one line. He is a fanatic of high degree, but accomplishes big things for his subrace, even though the physical brain may not be consciously aware of the egoic impulse. This process has a curious relation to the obscuration or fading out of the personality, for the particular principle embodied works through a corresponding permanent atom, and its spirillae become over rapidly developed, and hence their term of service wears to a close. This is a fact which is nevertheless taken advantage of when a superman or great adept becomes the embodiment, during a root race, of a principle. The vestures or sheath of which the permanent atom is the nucleus, through the innate strength of the developed spirillae, are preserved by the aid of mantric formulas. The vibration is perpetuated for a specific length of time, and for as long as the vesture or sheath may be required. A hint is here conveyed which may be of service. Again, when a man has become a disciple, he may, if he so wish, remain upon the astral plane and work there, and at his pleasure and under the adjustment of karma by his guru, he may take immediate physical birth. Page 751. A hint as to the mystery of the Bodhisattva may be found in these two thoughts, provided the student transfers the whole concept to the etheric levels of the cosmic physical plane, and remembers that on these levels the adept works altogether as a part of a group, and not as a separated identity, as does the ego in the three worlds. Therefore, the energy pouring through him may be a that of a particular center in the body of the planetary logos in its total force. B, that of a particular set of vibrations within that center or a part of its vibratory force. C, that of the energy of a particular principle, either one of his own higher principles which he is seeking to bring to bear upon the earth by taking incarnation for that specific purpose, or the energy of one of the planetary logoic principles as it pours through him via a particular spirilla or life current in the permanent atom of the planetary logos. When these types of force are centralized in any particular adept, and he is expressing simply that extraneous force and nothing else, the effect is shown on the physical plane in the appearance of an avatar. An avatar is, but an adept is made. But frequently the force, energy, purpose, or will of a cosmic entity will utilize the vehicles of an adept in order to contact the physical planes. This method, whereby cosmic existences make their power felt, can be seen working out on all the planes of the cosmic physical plane. A striking instance of this can be seen in the case of the Kumaras, who, under certain planetary forces and through the formation of a systemic triangle, gave the impulse to the third kingdom, which produced the fourth by bringing it into conjunction with the fifth. These Kumaras, Sanat Kumara and his three pupils, having achieved the highest initiation possible in the last great cycle, but having as yet, from their standpoint, another step to take, offered themselves to the planetary logos of their ray as focal points for his force, so that thereby he might hasten and perfect his plans on earth within the cycle of manifestation. Page 752. They have demonstrated three out of the four methods. They are overshadowed by the planetary logos, and he works directly as the initiator in relation to man through Sanat Kumara and with the three kingdoms in nature, through the three Buddhas of activity, Sanat Kumara being thus concerned directly with the ego on the mental plane, and his three pupils being concerned with the other three types of consciousness of which man is the summation. At the moment of initiation, after the second initiation, Sanat Kumara becomes the direct mouthpiece and agent of the planetary logos. That great entity speaks through him, and for one brief second, if one can use such a term in connection with a plane whereon time, as we understand it, is not, the planetary logos of a man's ray consciously, via his etheric brain, turns his thought upon the initiate and calls him by his name. Again, the Kumaras are embodied principles, but in this connection we must remember that this means that the force and energy of one of the principles of the logos are pouring through them via that which to them corresponds to the monad. Through them, during their period of incarnation and voluntary sacrifice, the great prototype of the planetary logos begins to make his presence felt, and force from the constellation of the Great Bear faintly vibrates on earth. At initiation, man becomes aware consciously of the presence of the planetary logos through self-induced contact with his own divine spirit. At the fifth initiation, he becomes aware of the full extent of this planetary group influence and of his part in the great whole. Page 753. At the sixth and seventh initiations, the influence of the planetary prototype is sensed, reaching him via the planetary logos working through the initiator. The method of direct incarnation was earlier seen when the Kumaras were in physical form. This only applied to some of them. Sanat Kumara and his pupils are in physical form, but have not taken dense physical bodies. They work on the vital etheric levels and dwell in etheric bodies. Shambhala, where they dwell, exists in physical matter as do the Kumaras, but it is matter of the higher ethers of the physical plane, and only when man has developed etheric vision will the mystery lying beyond the Himalayas be revealed. Therefore, Sanat Kumara is the planetary logos, yet he is not. A reflection of this method of direct incarnation can be seen when a disciple steps out of his body and permits his guru, or a more advanced chela, to use it. The mystery of the bodhisattvas has been touched upon by HPB, and until students have assimilated and studied what she has said, there is no more to add. Apprehension of truth is ever the factor that calls for fresh revelation. A very interesting period will come about the year 1966 and persist to the end of the century. It is one for which the great ones are already making due preparation. It concerns a centennial effort of the Lodge and of the personages taking part therein. Each century sees a centennial effort of the Lodge along a particular line of force made to forward the ends of evolution, and the effort for the 20th century will be upon a larger scale than has been the case for a very long time, and will involve a number of great ones. In a similar effort, during the 19th century, HPB was concerned, and a fairly large number of Chalas. In the effort immediately ahead, several of the great ones are concerned, and the Master of the Masters himself. In their forthcoming for work, three out of the various methods of appearing mentioned earlier will be seen in full activity, and it is on these three that we might now touch. Page 754. In the appearing of the Bodhisattva himself, the mystery of the Bodhisattva will be seen in its fullest sense, and it is not for us here to enlarge upon it. Suffice it to say that the vestures of the Great One will be used, but time will show whether the coming Lord will clothe upon those vestures a physical vehicle at this particular juncture, or whether the astral plane may not be the field of his activity. If the student ponders upon the consequences entailed in the appropriation of this vesture, much light upon probable happenings will be thrown. The vestures act in a dual capacity. A. They are very highly magnetized, and therefore have a profound and far-reaching effect when utilized. B. They act as a focal point for the force of the Lord Buddha, and link up the coming Lord with him, enabling him to increase his own stupendous resources by drawing upon still higher force centers via the Lord Buddha. This force will find its expression upon the astral plane, producing vast results of a quieting nature and bringing by reflex action peace on earth. The transmutation of desire into aspiration and the transformation of low desire into high desire will be some of the effects, while the result of the force flowing through will produce profound reactions of the deva denizens of that plane. Through the vibration thus set up will come the possibility of many, who would otherwise not do so, taking the first initiation. Later, towards the end of the greater cycle, the coming avatar will again employ the vestures with all that is entailed thereby, and will take a physical body, thus demonstrating on the physical plane the force of the Logos in the administration of the law. Page 755. When he comes at the close of this century and makes his power felt, he will come as the teacher of love and unity, and the keynote he will strike will be regeneration through love poured forth on all. As he will work primarily on the astral plane, this will demonstrate on the physical plane in the formation of active groups in every city of any size and in every country, which will work aggressively for unity, cooperation, and brotherhood in every department of life, economic, religious, social, and scientific. These groups will achieve results now impossible, owing to the retention of Buddhic force, but later this force will be set loose on earth via the medium of the Great Lord, operating as an aspect of the Logos and as a focal point for the consciousness and energy of the Buddha. It is this impending probability which is held in mind during the century at the annual recurrence of the Vaisak festival. Students would do well to further the ends of the occult hierarchy by a similar concentration at the time of the festival, thus setting up currents of thought which will have a great appeal in the occult sense of that term. Indication of the nearing of this event will be seen in the reaction which will be set up during the next 25 years against crime, Sovietism, and the extreme radicalism which is now being made use of by certain powers to achieve ends contrary to the plans of the Lord. The era of peace will be ushered in by a gathering together on earth of the forces which stand for construction and development, and by a conscious, deliberate banding together of groups in every land who embody the principle, as far as they can vision it, of brotherhood. Watch the signs of the times, and be not discouraged over the immediate future. Page 756. The appearance of the great Lord on the astral plane, whether followed by his physical incarnation or not, will date from a certain Waisak festival at which a mantram, known only to those attaining the seventh initiation, will be pronounced by the Buddha, thus setting loose force and enabling his great brother to fulfill his mission. Hence the gradual recognition of the Waisak festival and its true significance in the Occident is desirable, and opportunity will be offered to all who are willing to place themselves in the line of this force and thus become vitalized by it and consequently available for service. The reaction mentioned above will also become possible through the pressure brought to bear by the present children, many of whom are chelas and some initiates. They have come in to prepare the way for the coming of his feet. When the hour strikes, 5 years prior to the date of his descent, they will be in the full flower of their service and will have recognized their work, even though they may not be conscious of that which the future holds hid. When the hour has come, and already a few cases are to be found, many cases of overshadowing will be seen and will demonstrate in a threefold manner. In all countries, in the Orient and the Occident, prepared disciples and highly evolved men and women will be found who will be doing the work along the lines intended, and who will be occupying places of prominence which will make them available for the reaching of the many. Their bodies also will be sufficiently pure to permit of the overshadowing. It will only be possible in the case of those who have been consecrated since childhood, who have been servers of the race all their lives, or who, in previous lives, have acquired the right by karma. This threefold overshadowing will manifest as, first, an impression upon the physical brain of the man or woman of thoughts, plans for work, ideals, and intentions which, emanating from the avatar, will yet be unrecognized by him as being other than his own. He will proceed to put them into action, unconsciously helped by the force flowing in. This is literally a form of higher mental telepathy working out on physical levels. Page 757. Second, the overshadowing of the chela during his work, such as lecturing, writing, or teaching, and his illumination for service. He will be conscious of this, though perhaps unable to explain it, and will seek more and more to be available for use, rendering himself up in utter selflessness to the inspiration of his Lord. This is effected via the chela's ego, the force flowing through his astral permanent atom, and it is only possible when the fifth petal is unfolded. Third, the conscious cooperation of the chela is necessitated in the third method of overshadowing. In this case, he will, with full knowledge of the laws of his being and nature, surrender himself and step out of his physical body, handing it over for the use of the great Lord or one of his masters. This is only possible in the case of a chela who has brought all the three lower bodies into alignment and necessitates the unfolding of the sixth petal. By an act of conscious will, he renders up his body and stands aside for a specific length of time. These methods of overshadowing will be largely the ones used by the great Lord and his masters at the end of the century, and for this reason they are sending into incarnation in every country disciples who have the opportunity offered them to respond to the need of humanity. Hence the need of training men and women to recognize the higher psychism and the true inspiration and mediumship, and to do this scientifically. In 50 years' time, the need for true psychics and conscious mediums, such as HPB, for instance, will be very great if the Master's plans are to be carried to fruition, and the movement must be set on foot in preparation for the coming of him for whom all nations wait. Page 758. In this work, many have their share, provided they demonstrate the necessary endurance. Naturally, the first group will be the largest, for it does not necessitate so much knowledge, but more risk is entailed with them than with the others, the risk of a perversion of the plans and of disaster to the unit involved. The second group will be less numerous, and the last group will involve only a handful, or two or three, in certain countries. In this case, it will be verily true that through sacrifice the Son of Man will again tread the highways of men, and his physical incarnation be a fact. Very few will be thus available for his use, as the force he carries requires a peculiarly resilient instrument, but due preparation is being made. Again, the method of direct incarnation will be employed by certain of the masters and initiates through the process of A. physical birth, B. appropriation of a suitable vehicle or body, C. direct creation by an act of will. This will be rare. The second or middle method will be the one most frequently employed. Six of the masters, as yet quite unknown to the average occult student by name, have already sought physical incarnation, one in India, another in England, two in Northern America, and one in Central Europe, whilst another has made a great sacrifice and taken a Russian body in the desire to act as a peace center in that distracted land. Certain initiates of the third initiation have taken feminine bodies. One in India will in due time do much toward the emancipation of the women of India, whilst another has a peculiar work to do in connection with the animal kingdom, which likewise is awaiting the day of his appearing. Page 759. The Master Jesus will take a physical vehicle and will, with certain of his chelas, effect a re-spiritualization of the Catholic churches, breaking down the barrier separating the Episcopal and Greek churches from the Roman. This may be looked for, should plans progress as hoped, about the year 1980. The Master Hilarion will also come forth and become a focal point of Buddhic energy in the vast spiritualistic movement, whilst another master is working with the Christian Science endeavor in an effort to swing it on to sounder lines. It is interesting to note that those movements which have laid the emphasis so strongly on the heart or love aspect may respond more rapidly to the inflow of force at the coming than other movements which consider themselves very advanced. The mind may slay the recognition of the real, and hatred between brothers swing the tide of love force away. The three masters so closely allied with the Theosophical movement are already making their preparations and will also move among men recognized by their own and by those who have eyes to see. To those of their chelas on earth who undergo the necessary discipline, opportunity will be offered to work on the astral plane, and, should they so choose, an immediate incarnation, provided they have achieved continuity of consciousness. He who is known as DK is planning to restore, via his students, some of the old and occult methods of healing, and to demonstrate A. the place of the etheric body, B. the effect of pranic force, C. the opening up of etheric vision. It is not permissible to say more in connection with the plans of the Great Ones. Their appearing will not be simultaneous in time, for the people could not stand the tremendously increased inflow of force, and recognition of them and of their methods will depend upon the intuition and the training of the inner senses. Page 760. They come with no herald, and only their works will proclaim them. E. Impulse and incarnation. Perhaps light upon this very difficult question of the incarnating jivas, of adepts and of avatars, may come if the student remembers that 1. An ordinary man demonstrates the third aspect of intelligent activity in his personality life, and is evolving consciously the second aspect, or the egoic manifestation, on the physical plane. 2. An adept in incarnation is demonstrating fully the second aspect as well as the third, and in his own internal life is in process of evolving the first aspect, or is endeavoring to bring through the monadic life into conscious activity on the Buddhic plane. 3. An avatar demonstrates one of two things according to his peculiar karma. A. The pure light of the monad, brought through by means of the perfected ego and personality onto the physical plane. The line of force extends straight through from monadic levels to the physical. B. The light of the Logos himself, in one or other aspect, this being transmitted consciously via the monad straight through to the physical plane from the planetary Logos, or even from the solar Logos himself. In the first two cases, desire for sentient existence or desire for service to humanity are the factors which produce physical manifestation, one through the force of evolution itself, the other through a conscious act of the will. Desire for sentient existence is but the latent second aspect seeking expression by means of the not-self. And in the other case, the manifested second aspect consciously utilizes form as a means to an end. In the case of all avatars, it is the will aspect which is brought into play and which produces appearance, either the will of the perfected adept, such as the Buddha himself, or, as in the case of the true avatar, who is and who has not achieved, the will of the planetary logos, or of the solar logos, taking form for a specific purpose. Page 761. It involves a higher display of the creative faculty than that displayed by the adept in the creation of his body of manifestation, the Maya Virupa. Footnote: the Maya Virupa is literally the illusory form. It is the body of temporary manifestation which the adept creates on occasion through the power of the will, and in which he functions in order to make certain contacts on the physical plane and to engage in certain work for the race. Return to text. The terms appropriation of a physical body and creation of a physical body must be extended to include all the planes of the solar system, and not just our physical plane, the seventh subplane of the cosmic physical. The causes which combine to produce incarnation are seen to be three. 1. Egoic impulse. 2. The activity of the solar and lunar angels. 3. Karma, or the place which antecedent action plays in producing manifestation. We can hardly dissociate them in the consideration of our subject, owing to the innate constitution of the egoic body itself, and the factor the indwelling consciousness plays in producing appearance through an act of will. Let us briefly, therefore, reconsider what we have learned anent the egoic body and its constitution, and then take up the steps followed by the ego in producing results in the three worlds. We have seen that on the third level of the mental plane, the egoic lotus is found, and the student should picture it to himself as follows. Concealed at the very center or heart of the lotus is a brilliant point of electric fire of a blue-white hue, the jewel in the lotus, surrounded and completely hidden by three closely folded petals. Page 762. Around this central nucleus or inner flame are arranged the nine petals in circles of three petals each, making three circles in all. These petals are formed out of the substance of the solar angels, as are the central three, substance which is not only sentient, as is the substance of the forms in the three worlds and the lunar bodies, but which has an added quality of I-ness, or of self-consciousness, enabling the spiritual unity at the center, by means of it, to acquire knowledge, awareness, and self-realization. These nine petals are of a predominant orange hue, though the six other colors are found as secondary colors in a varying degree. The inner three petals are of a lovely lemon-yellow hue. At the base of the lotus petals are the three points of light which mark the position of the permanent atoms, and which are the medium of communication between the solar angels and the lunar petries. By means of these permanent atoms, the ego, according to its state of evolution, can construct his lunar bodies, acquire knowledge on the lower three planes, and thus by his experience, and becomes aware. On a higher turn of the spiral, the monad through the egoic petals, and thus with the aid of the solar angels, acquires knowledge, and equally on more exalted levels, becomes aware. The light within these permanent atoms has a dull red glow, and we have therefore all the three fires demonstrating in the causal body, the electric fire at the center, solar fire enclosing it as the flame encloses the central nucleus or essence in a candle flame, and fire by friction, this latter fire resembling the glowing red wick which lies at the base of the higher flame. These three types of fire on the mental plane, meeting and unified in the egoic body, produce in time a radiation or warmth which streams out from all sides of the lotus, and forms that spheroidal shape noted by investigators. Page 763. The more fully developed the ego may be, and the more the petals are unfolded, the greater the beauty of the surrounding sphere, and the more refined its coloring. At the early stages after individualization, the egoic body has the appearance of a bud. The electric fire at the center is not apparent, and all the nine petals are closed down upon the inner three. The orange color has a dead aspect, and the three points of light at the base are just points and nothing more. The triangle, which is later seen connecting the points, is not demonstrated. The surrounding sphere is colorless and is only to be appreciated as undulatory vibrations like waves in the air or ether reaching barely beyond the petal outline. By the time the third initiation is reached, a wondrous transformation has transpired. The outer sphere is palpitating with every color in the rainbow and is of wide radius. The streams of electrical energy circulating in it are so powerful that they are escaping beyond the periphery of the circle, resembling the rays of the sun. The nine petals are fully unfolded, forming a gracious setting for the central jewel, and their orange hue is now of a gorgeous translucence, shot with many colors, that of the egoic ray predominating. The triangle at the base is now quickened and scintillating, and the three points are small blazing fires showing to the eye of the clairvoyant as sevenfold whorls of light, circulating their light from point to point of a rapidly moving triangle. By the time the fourth initiation is reached, the activity of this triangle is so great that it looks more like a wheel in rapid revolution. It has a fourth dimensional aspect. The three petals at the center are opening up, revealing the blazing jewel. At this initiation, through the action of the Hierophant wielding the electric rod of power, the three fires are suddenly stimulated by a downflow of electric or positive force from the monad, and their blazing out in response produces that merging which destroys the entire sphere, dissipates all appearance of form, and produces a moment of equilibrium or of suspension in which the elements are consumed with fervent heat. Page 764. The moment of highest radiation is known. Then, through the pronouncement of a certain word of power, the great solar angels gather back into themselves the solar fire, thus producing the final dissipation of the form, and hence the separation of the life from the form. The fire of matter returns to the general reservoir, and the permanent atoms and the causal body are no more. The central electric fire becomes centralized in Atma Buddhi. The thinker or spiritual entity stands free of the three worlds and functions consciously on the buddhic plane. Between these two stages of quiescent, though self-conscious, inertia, and of that radiant activity which produces a balancing of forces, is a long series of lives. In our consideration of the subject of the reincarnating jivas, we have touched upon three subjects. A. Avatars, with the intent of disposing of the confusion in the minds of students as to certain types of appearances. In our present study, we shall deal only with the process followed by ordinary men. B. Pralayas, with the intent of arousing in the mind of the student the idea of interludes of quiescence dependent upon the intervening periods of activity. C. The appearance of the body egoic and its general conformation, with the intent of awakening the realization of the student to the fact that evolution affects that body also, and not only man's forms in the three worlds. The effects of the process are interdependent, and as the lower self develops, or the personality becomes more active and intelligent, results are produced in the higher body. As these effects are cumulative and not ephemeral, as are the lower results, the egoic body becomes equally more active and its manifestation of energy is increased. Page 765. Towards the close of the evolutionary period in the three worlds, a constant interchange of energy is seen to be taking place. The lower forms become irradiated with light and reflect the higher radiance. The egoic body is the sun of the lower system, and its bodies reflect its rays, as the moon reflects the light of the solar sun. Similarly, the egoic sun, through the interaction, shines with ever greater intensity and glory. On the higher levels, a similar interaction takes place for a brief period between the monad and its reflection, the ego, but only in the coming solar system will this interaction be carried to its logical conclusion. Having therefore very briefly dealt with these three topics, we can now proceed to consider the process followed by the ego when seeking manifestation in the three worlds. Let us endeavor in our thoughts to interpret all these processes in terms of energy and of force. The old commentary says, quote, "When the spark is touched to the four wicks, and when spiritual fire in its threefold essence meets with that which is combustible, the flame bursts forth. Faint the flicker at the first appearing, and near to death it seems, but the wicks smolder and glow, and the heat is retained. This is cycle the first, and is called that of the glowing wheel. The flicker grows into a tiny flame, and the four wicks burn but are not consumed, for the heat does not suffice. The light of these three fires is yet so small that the cave is not illumined. Nevertheless, the flame and the essential heat can be felt by the one who approaches and watches. This is the second cycle, and is called that of the warming wheel. The tiny flame becomes a lighted lamp. The fire flares up, but much smoke is there, for the wicks are burning fast, and the heat suffices for their quick destruction. The lamp, set in the midst of darkness, makes the thick blackness manifest itself. The light and warmth are felt. This, the third cycle, is called that of the lighted wheel." Page 766. "The four wicks and the flame appear as one, and nearly all the smoke is gone, for flame is mostly seen. The cave itself is lighted up, though the lamp is yet apparent. Cycle the fourth is called the hour of the flaming wheel. The final cycle comes when even the lamp itself is burned, destroyed through the intensity of heat. The one who watches, seeing the work accomplished, fans the central point of fire and produces a sudden flaming. The wicks are not. The flame is all. This, so the sacred science says, is called the cycle of the wheel consumed." Close quote. Here in the arcane symbology is hid, in terms of energy and of radiant activity, the whole secret of egoic energy and of impulse making its presence felt in the substance of the lower planes. The student should interpret the above sentences both macrocosmically and microcosmically. In all manifestation, the originating impulse comes from the first aspect, which is hidden at the heart of the egoic lotus, but this hidden identity works under law, and in the earlier stages, the first three cycles, the process goes on under the law of economy, which is the law of substance itself. In the final two cycles, this law becomes merged, though not superseded, being still potent, with the law of attraction, which is the fundamental law of the divine self. It is the failure to realize this which has resulted in the confusion existing in the minds of many metaphysicians as to which demonstrated first, desire or will, and as to the distinction between them, between impulse and purpose, and between instinct and intention. In the earlier stages, man reincarnates under the law of economy, and though the will aspect lies back of the process, yet for a long time it is the pull of sensation and its reflex in consciousness desire which produces rebirth. Sensation being a quality in matter or substance, the self in the beginning identifies itself with sensation. Later, when the self is beginning to identify itself with itself and to recognize the nature of the not-self, the law of attraction and repulsion becomes more active, and conscious will and purpose are displayed. Page 767. Here it should be remembered that a profound difference in time and space exists between the logos or macrocosm and man, the microcosm. Average man comes into incarnation through egoic impulse based on desire and on the relation of the second aspect to the third aspect, or of the self to the not-self. He will eventually bring about through evolution the revelation of the first aspect, and then egoic impulse based on conscious mental apprehension of the purpose in view will be the dominant factor and will demonstrate through a definite will to act. In connection with the logos, the first stage has been left far behind, and logoic manifestation is based on will and purpose and on conscious intelligent activity. The reason for this is that the logos and the planetary logoi likewise are on the path of cosmic initiation. Therefore, though the originating impulse comes from the central point, it is not at first apparent. At the moment of individualization, the dim outline of a form, such as earlier described, has made its appearance on mental levels, and, which is a point not as yet recognized by students, it becomes apparent that a period on mental levels has transpired, given over to a preparation for the imminent event. Through the activity of the solar angels, the 12 petals have gradually taken form, as the point of electric fire at the heart has begun to make itself felt, even though not as yet localized. Then the first 3 petals take shape and close down upon the vibrant point or jewel under the potency of the law of attraction. One by one, the 9 other petals take shape as the vibrations begin to affect solar substance, the 3 types of petals being each under the influence of one or other of the major rays. These, in their turn, come under the influence of force from cosmic centers. Page 768. As earlier said, these petals form a bud, each being closely folded. Only faint vibrations are to be seen pulsating in the bud, just enough to testify to its being a living organism. Shadowy and dim can the ring pass not be seen, the encircling limit of the activity of the coming consciousness. It is an ovoid or sphere, and very small as yet. This process of forming the egoic lotus has gone on silently from the moment that the lower animal man, or the lower 4 principles, had reached a point where the energy generated by him could begin to make itself felt on mental levels. When the fire of the lower prepared sheaths, the threefold fire of substance itself, becomes radioactive, this nebulous appearance on the 3rd subplane of the mental plane begins to be organized as the result of the downward pull of the higher by the lower, and as the response of the spirit aspect to the radiations or attraction of matter. But individualization as we understand it is not yet effected. This process of radioactivity on the part of the lower and of a downflow of energy from the higher covers a long period wherein the solar angels are working on their own plane and the lower petries are also working on theirs. One group is producing the nucleus of the egoic body and the other the receptacle for the life of God or the monad in the 3 worlds. Then comes a set time in the life of the planetary logos wherein his centers become active in a particular manner. This is coincident with the incarnation of the monads and their descent into the 3 worlds. A systemic triangle is formed, forever the 3 produce the 7, and through this setting loose of threefold energy, the work of the solar and lunar petries is coordinated, and the 3 permanent atoms are appropriated by the jiva concerned and appear at the base of the egoic lotus. Individualization has taken place, and the work of at-one-ment is completed. The 4th kingdom in nature is a fait accompli. The monad has clothed itself in material sheaths, and the self-conscious unit appears on the physical plane. Page 769. If all that HPB has to say anent the first 3 rounds of our Earth scheme is read as dealing with the period of condensation of the causal body upon the mental level, and as covering the time leading up to the appearance in the 4th round of man as we now have him, some light may be thrown upon this difficult matter. The egoic lotuses can be seen grouped together, and each of them forms a part of a group. These groups, in their turn, form part of a vaster lotus which embodies the consciousness of a still greater entity whose jewel may be found on the 2nd subplane. All these, in their turn, may be divided into 7 fundamental groups. These 7 groups, or aggregates of egoic lotuses, form the seven types of consciousness of those entities who are the seven centers of force for our own planetary logos. These seven, in their turn, will be synthesized on higher levels into the three higher centers, till the entire energy and force which they represent is gathered up and absorbed by the center corresponding to the highest head center of the planetary logos. Each logos embodies one type of cosmic energy. Each of his centers embodies this type of energy in one of its seven differentiations. Each of these seven, in turn, manifests through egoic groups, and these again are composed of those points of energy we call egos. End of side one, cassette number 18, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, page 769, continued on side two. Side two, cassette number 18, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, continuing section 2, division D, Thought and Fire Elementals, on page 769. These multitudes of egoic groups form a radiant interlocking whole, though all are diverse and differing both as to their point of development and their secondary coloring. Just as the petals in the egoic lotus of the incarnating jivas unfold in differing order and at different periods, so the egoic groups also unfold diversely as to time and sequence. This produces a wonderful appearance. Again, just as the master can, by studying the group or larger lotus of which he is a part, ascertain the condition of the human units who go to its constitution, so the planetary logos can ascertain through conscious identification, note the term, the condition of the various groups through whom his work must be accomplished. Page 770. It will now be apparent to the student that the appearance of the incarnating jivas on the physical plane will be governed by three things. First of all, on impulse based on the will purpose of the life animating the aggregate of groups on any subray, or one of the seven larger groups. Second, on impulse based on the will, tinged by desire, of the life animating a man's egoic group. Third, on impulse based on the desire of the ego for physical plane manifestation. As identification of a man with his group becomes matured, the desire impulse becomes modified until it is eventually superseded by group will. If these facts are pondered upon, it will be apparent that egos come into incarnation, therefore, not singly, but according to group urge, and thus collectively. This is the basis of collective karma and of family karma. The individual urge, which is, of course, a reaction to group urge, is the result of personal karma. Hence, though we may, by these reflections, have thrown some light upon this question of reincarnation, we have nevertheless said much to increase the magnitude of the question and its complexity. Average man is confined to the use of the physical brain and is therefore unable to think in group terms. This egoic impulse in any group or any group unit makes itself felt as a pulsation or access of energy emanating from the central point. This central activity is produced by the action of the planetary logos working through the groups in his centers, and according to the center under stimulation, so will the groups concerned be affected. Page 771. Beyond mentioning this fact, we cannot enlarge, for the subject is stupendous and beyond a man's comprehension. It is only necessary for him to appreciate his dependence in this matter upon the planetary logos. From the group center, therefore, emanates an urge to renewed activity, and this spreads throughout the group lotus until the units who respond to that particular ray vibration occultly awaken. All this time, as far as the jivas are concerned, this aspect of force has been that of the first aspect, and has passed from the central points to other central points. The positive nuclei in each case are affected by this flashing forth of electric fire or energy. Each point concerned responds by a primary contraction followed by an outgoing or expansive display of energy. Each identity concerned proceeds to sound a word. This sound expands into a mantram, and the solar angels vibrate in response. There is a point of interest to be noted here. A. The first aspect works through a word of power. B. The second aspect works through mantric combinations. C. The third aspect works through mathematical formulas. Having sounded the word, the first aspect, represented by the electric fire at the center of the lotus, sinks back into quiescence and becomes an abstraction as far as the self-conscious unit is concerned. The work has been begun, the necessary vibration has been set up, and the whole process then proceeds under law. The solar angels have begun their activity, and until their work has reached a very high stage, the spirit aspect must become, in the causal body, an analogy to the silent watcher. As the solar angels continue sounding out the mantram, which is the basis of their work, the lunar petries respond to certain sounds in that mantram, not to all by any means at first, and gather out of those sounds the formula under which their work must proceed. Page 772. So the word is the basis of the mantram, and the mantram is the basis of the formula. At each incarnation, finer forms are required, and the formulas therefore grow more complicated, and the sounds on which they are based become more numerous. In time, the formulas are completed, and the lunar petries respond no more to the sounds or mantrams chanted on the mental plane. This is indicative of the stage of perfection, and shows that the three worlds have no more a downward pull for the jiva concerned. Desire for lower manifestation and experience has no more sway, and only conscious purpose is left. Then, and only then, can the true Maya Virupa be constructed. The master then sounds the mantram for himself and builds without formulas in the three worlds. At the time, too, that man begins to tread the probationary path, the mantrams of the solar angels begin to die down, and slowly, as the petals of the inner circle open up, the true word emerges until the three enshrining petals burst open and the central spark is revealed. Then the word is fully known, and mantrams and formulas have no further use. Thus is the beauty of the scheme revealed. When the planetary logos is concerned, the word sounded on cosmic levels is being resolved into mantrams on the cosmic etheric planes, for he is in a position to create consciously on those levels. He works nevertheless through formulas on the dense physical planes of his scheme, our three worlds of endeavor. To return to the reincarnating jivas. When the initiatory impulse has been given, the vibration thrills through the petals, and activity starts in those of them which respond to the note of that word. The solar angels direct the vibration, and the mantram for that particular type of ego is begun. Page 773. Finally, the vibration reaches the mental unit at the base of the lotus bud, and the lunar petries are called into activity. They begin to work out their formulas for the particular type of vehicle which is required. F. Activity of the petries. The joint activity of the solar and lunar petries in the process pursued by the reincarnating ego is our next subject of consideration. Footnote. The joint activity of solar and lunar petries. 1. The spark hangs from the flame by the finest thread of Fohat. A. The three-tongued flame that never dies, triad. B. The four wicks, quaternary. C. The thread of Fohat, thread of life. 2. It journeys through the seven worlds of Maya, macrocosmically, the seven planetary schemes. Planetary, the seven chains of a scheme. Microcosmically, the seven globes of a chain. Note and meditate upon the divine septenary hanging from the triad, thus forming the decad and its permutation, 7, 5, and 3. 3. It stops in the first and is a metal and a stone. It passes into the second and behold, a plant. The plant whirls through seven forms and becomes a sacred animal. Note the Kabbalistic aphorism, a stone becomes a plant a beast a man a spirit, and the spirit God. 4. From the combined attributes of these, Manu the thinker is formed. 5. Who forms him? The seven lives and the one life. The seven groups of lives who form the three lower bodies, the lunar Pitris, or fathers of the material forms. 6. Who completes him? The fivefold La. Who unites the higher spiritual triad and the lower self? A. The fivefold gods of the intelligence. B. The fifth principle of mind. 7. Who perfects the last body? Fish, Sin, and Soma. A. Fish, Sin, and Soma collectively compose the three symbols of the immortal being. B. Fish, symbol of the Buddhic principle, the manifested life on earth. Note the avatara of Vishnu, the sign of Pisces, the fish, Jesus, the fisher of men. C. Sin, the fall of man, involution of spirit. D. Soma, moon, the work of lunar Pitris, providing bodies. From The Secret Doctrine, Volumes 1 and 2, return to text. The ego, driven by desire for physical experience, has made the initial move, and a vibration emanating from the center of the lotus bud has reached the lotus petals and has consequently vibrated in deva substance, or in matter vitalized by the Agnishvatas, page 774. As they are galvanized into activity, according to the group affected, the vibration is increased and a dual sound is emitted. This dual sound is the basis of the mantram upon which the ego's cycle of incarnation is founded. The vibration, pulsating through the outer circle of petals, for the two inner circles and the three central petals are not as yet responsive, arrives at the triangle formed by the three permanent atoms and vivifies the three lower spirillae, causing a slight response in the fourth, and leaving the higher three yet dormant. In each round, one of the spirillae has been created, and in this fourth round, through the creation of the fourth spirilla, the fourth or human kingdom can come into being. The word creation must be occultly understood and means the appearance in active manifestation of some form of energy. Only in the next round will the fifth spirilla be an active functioning unit, in a sense incomprehensible now. Students should bear in mind that this applies primarily to the humanity individualized on this globe and was also equally true in the earlier chain. Units, however, which come into this fourth or earth chain from the earlier one are much ahead of Earth's humanity, and their fifth spirilla is awakening into organized activity in this round. All in nature overlaps. When, therefore, this vibration from the central will has arrived at the atomic triangle, it is an indication that the entire lotus is turning its force downwards, and for the period of manifestation, the flow of egoic energy is towards the lower, and consequently away from the higher. There is, at this stage, very little turning of egoic energy in the direction of the monad, for it has not yet generated enough force, and is not as yet radioactive towards the spirit aspect. Its activities are primarily internal and self-centered for the greater part of the time, or are directed towards arousing the permanent atoms and not towards the unfolding of the petals. This should be carefully borne in mind. Page 775. The work of the solar angels is of a triple nature. 1. Directing the vibration towards the atomic triangle. Here, a very interesting fact must be borne in mind. The three permanent atoms, or the three points of the triangle, do not always hold the same relative position as regards the center of the lotus, but according to the stage of development, so will be the position of the atoms, and so will be the apprehension of the inflowing force. In the earlier stages, the physical permanent atom is the first to receive the inflow, passing it through its system to the astral permanent atom and the mental unit. This force is circulated four times around the triangle, this being the fourth round, until the mental unit is again contacted and the energy becomes centralized in the fourth spirilla of the mental unit. Then, and only then, do the lunar Pitris begin their work and commence the coordination of the substance which will form the mental sheath, next working with the astral body, and finally with the etheric body. At a later stage in the evolution of man, the stage wherein the average man is now, the astral permanent atom is the first contacted, and the energy circulates through it to the other two. At the stage of advanced intellectual man, the mental unit takes the primary place. In this case, there is now the possibility of the alignment of the three bodies, which will later be an accomplished fact. The fifth spirilla in the lower two atoms increases its vibration. As we know, there are only four spirillae in the mental unit, and the moment that that is in full activity, the coordination of the antascarana becomes a possibility. Changes are now taking place in the egoic lotus, and the petals are unfolding, that unfoldment being partially dependent upon the vibration in the spirillae and their awakening. Page 776. The student should bear in mind the fact that as soon as the mental unit has become the apex of the atomic triangle, a condition is brought about wherein force in the future will enter the three atoms simultaneously through the three unfolded petals of the outer circle, and the man has therefore reached a very definite stage in evolution. The direction of force and its application to the atoms is the work of the solar petries. As evolution proceeds, their work in this connection becomes more complex, for the petals are unfolding and the triangle is revolving more rapidly. 2. Pronouncing the mantram which will make possible the 777 incarnations. Each of the figures in this triplicity stands for A. A cycle of egoic manifestation, B. A particular sound which will enable the ego to express some sub-ray of this egoic ray, C. The three circles of petals which will unfold as the result of incarnation, D. The particular group of manasa devas who form the causal body of the ego concerned. The mantric sounds are therefore based on these figures, and through the mantram, which grows in volume, depth, and number of sounds involved as time elapses, the force is directed, the petals concerned are stimulated into activity, and the lunar petries become aware of the work to be done in preparation for any incarnation. 3. Building into the causal body that which is required for its completion. In the early stages, this work is comparatively small, but as the third stage of development is reached and the man is demonstrating character and ability, their work is rapidly increased and they are kept fully occupied in the work of perfecting the egoic body, in expanding the egoic consciousness, if metaphysical terms are preferred. All this is accomplished by means of the material furnished by the lower self. Page 777. When that lower personality becomes gradually radioactive, these radiations are attracted to the positive ego and are absorbed into its nature through the activity of the solar angels. These three activities are the main work of the solar petries where man is concerned. Where the group and not the individual is concerned, their work lies along the line of adjusting the egoic units in their groups and of making them group conscious. But this is only possible towards the final stages of evolution when the work of the highest group of Agnishvatas is in order. The middle group who form the nine petals are always the most active. They work in connection with the lower group who are the direct transmitters of energy to the atomic triangle, receiving it from the middle group. More of their work it is not possible to detail, for the work of the Agnishvatas is vast and intricate, and differs also in the various schemes in certain particulars. Those who are working in the Uranus, the Neptune, and the Saturn scheme work somewhat differently to those functioning in the Venus, the Vulcan, the Mars, the Mercury, the Jupiter, the Earth, and the exoteric Saturn scheme, and so do the Manasa Devas of the inner round. We should note here that we again have a triplicity of groups representing a triplicity of force, and herein lies a hint. In the central list of schemes, the middle and lower group of Agnishvatas are active. In the others, the higher group and middle group hold sway, as these planets are the most occult and sacred in manifestation, and are concerned only with egos who are on the path, and who are therefore group active. In connection with Uranus, Neptune, and Saturn, this might be expected, as they are the synthesizing planetary schemes and provide conditions suitable only for the very advanced stages, They are the reaping planets. Page 778. Much confusion in connection with egos exists in the minds of our students on account of their failure to realize that, as HPB has pointed out, the secret doctrine is primarily concerned with the planetary scheme of our Earth and has little to impart anent the other schemes and their methods of evolving self-consciousness. The general procedure on the mental levels is the same, but as each scheme embodies one particular type of force, the peculiarity of that force will color all its evolution, and the work of the Agni Shvatas will correspond. It is not possible to state what is the peculiar coloring of the ray which is embodied in our scheme, as it is one of the most secret of the mysteries revealed at initiation. But students must bear in mind that in the fundamentals laid down here, we are not dealing specifically with our scheme. A great deal has been said in modern occult literature anent the process followed in the perfecting of those egos who choose to remain with the hierarchy of our planet and their methods of development through trailership to adeptship. But nothing practically has been imparted anent the many egos who reach a certain high stage of evolution in our scheme and who are then transferred to one of the three synthesizing schemes, passing first to the scheme which is the polar opposite to ours, and from thence to the synthesizing scheme. They are numerically more than those who remain within the Earth scheme. Whichever may be the synthesizing scheme to which they are attracted, it marks and indicates their start upon one of the three cosmic paths. The work of the Manasa Devas is carried on throughout the entire system, and a constant circulation transpires, and a constant transmission of energy and of force units embodying that energy goes on throughout the entire system. This transmission becomes possible in any scheme when the fourth or human kingdom becomes radioactive. It really marks the setting in of the period of obscuration. Venus is a case in point. Page 779. Metaphysically stated, it marks the point when the Logoi begin to dissociate themselves from their dense physical bodies, or from the three worlds of human endeavor. The three groups of Agni Shvatas concerned with the evolution of man on the mental level have each a specific function, as we have already seen, and the lowest of the three deal primarily with the transmission of force or energy to the three permanent atoms. In the dual sounding of the egoic mantram by the lowest of the three groups, changes are brought about, and the lunar Petris, who concern themselves with the lower three vehicles, enter upon their work, the key being given to them by the solar angels. These lunar Petris embody the substance of man's lower bodies, just as the solar Petris sacrifice themselves to give him his egoic body and his consciousness. Footnote. The ego is described thus in the secret doctrine. Each is a pillar of light. Having chosen its vehicle, it expanded, surrounding with an akashic aura the human animal, with the divine principle settled within the human form. They are the fire Dhyanis and emanate from the heart of the sun. They are the sons of fire and fashion inner man. The solar angels, the sons of wisdom, are entities seeking fuller consciousness. A. They had intellect through previous contact with matter. B. They were incarnated under the law of karma. C. They had to become all wise. D. These solar angels are high intelligences. E. They are Nirmanakayas. F. They are the celestial yogis. From the Secret Doctrine, Volumes 2 and 3. Footnote. Nirmanakaya is a name made up of two words which signify having no body and has no reference whatever to moral qualities. It is a state of consciousness. The great teachers of nirvanic spheres are called by this name. Return to text. They are substance in its dual aspect, and the lunar Petris in their higher grades are the positive energy of atomic substance, and in their lower are the negative aspect of the same substance. They might be considered in connection with man as triple in their ranks. Page 780. A, the highest group of all receives the energy from the higher levels and ensouls the spirillae of the three permanent atoms. B, the second group, being the positive energy that attracts, builds, and forms the body of man on the three planes. C, the lowest group are the negative aspect of energized substance and the matter of the three sheaths. In connection with the solar system, they embody the Brahma aspect, being the product of earlier cycles wherein conscious activity was achieved, but self-consciousness was only arrived at by certain cosmic entities who passed through conscious substance and gave to it that potentiality which will enable atomic substance, after many kalpas, to develop self-consciousness. In connection with a planet, they are called by a mysterious name which may not be revealed, as it conceals the mystery of the scheme which preceded ours, and of which ours is a reproduction. There are Petris who work in connection with the planet and with the solar system, as well as those working in connection with the human kingdom. They embody the energy of substance as demonstrated in a system, a scheme, and a human cycle. There are also, in connection with our peculiar Earth scheme, those lunar Petris who reach their present stage of activity in the moon chain. They are Deva groups, but unlike the Agnishvatas, they have not passed through the human stage. For them, it has yet to be achieved, and their present experience in connection with the human hierarchy has that end in view. It should be remembered that it is a fundamental law in occult development that any life can only give out that which it has possessed, and possession of the varying attributes of consciousness from that of the atom up to the consciousness of a solar logos is the result of long cycles of acquirement. Page 781. The solar Petris, therefore, could give to man his consciousness. The lunar Petris could give to him the instinctual consciousness of his vehicles. In their aggregate in all the kingdoms of nature, on this planet and elsewhere, they give to the planetary logos and to the solar logos the sum total of the form consciousness of their respective bodies. This is the case in every scheme in the system. But in the Earth chain, a peculiar condition of affairs was brought about through the planetary failure coincident with the moon chain. This is the cause of the present balancing of forces on this chain. The fourth chain in every scheme sees the work of the solar Petris in connection with man begun. It sees also the Petris of his sheaths in activity through the impulse given by the solar angels. The matter of those sheaths has passed through three chains and three rounds and is vibrant to a note which is tuned to the dot dot dot. To word it otherwise, the third can be clearly sounded, and is followed naturally by the fifth or the dominant. The simultaneous sounding of the third and the fifth, basing it upon the planetary keynote, produces the effect of a threefold chord or a fourth tone, a complex sound. I am here dealing with the chord of the human hierarchy as a whole. Within the hierarchy there is again diversity, based upon the hierarchical chord, and this produces the many egoic chords and notes. These produce in their turn objective manifestation. We can now trace the progress of egoic energy as it passes down from the abstract levels to the permanent atoms. On each plane the work is threefold and might be tabulated as follows. 1. The response within the permanent atom to the vibration set up by the solar Petris. To word it otherwise, the response of the highest group of lunar Petris to the chord of the ego. Page 782. This definitely affects the spirillae of the atom, according to the stage of evolution of the ego concerned. 2. The response of the substance to the atomic vibration upon the particular plane involved. This concerns the second group of Petris, whose function it is to gather together the substance attuned to any particular key, and to aggregate it around the permanent atom. They work under the law of magnetic attraction, and are the attractive energy of the permanent atom. On a tiny scale, each permanent atom has, to the substance of a man's sheath, a position relative to that which the physical sun holds to the substance of the system. It is the nucleus of attractive force. 3. The response of the negative substance concerned and its molding into the desired form through the dual energy of the two higher groups of Petris. Some thought of the unity of this threefold work has been given in the differentiation of the substance of any plane into A. atomic substance, B. molecular substance, C. elemental essence. This differentiation is not entirely accurate, and a truer idea of the underlying concept might be conveyed if the word energy took the place of substance and essence. This third group of Petries is really not correctly termed Petries at all. The true lunar Petries are those of the first and highest group, for they embody one aspect of the intelligent will of Brahma, or of God in substance. The third group are literally the lesser builders and are blind, incoherent forces subject to the energy emanating from the two higher groups. Occultly, these three groups are divided into the following: A. the Petries who see but touch nor handle not, B. the Petries who touch but see not, C. the Petries who hear but neither see nor touch. Page 783. As they all have the gift of occult hearing, they are characterized as the Petries with the open ear. They work entirely under the influence of the egoic mantram. If these differentiations are studied, a great deal may become apparent anent a very important group of deva workers. They are a group who only come into manifestation as a coordinated triplicity in the fourth round in order to provide vehicles for man. The reason for this lies hid in the karma of the seven logoi as they energize the fourth, fifth, and sixth hierarchies. In the earlier round in each scheme, these three groups attain a certain stage of necessitated growth and embody the highest evolution of the substance aspect. Only the highest and most perfected of the atoms of substance find their way into the vehicles of man, those which have been the integral parts of the higher evolutionary forms. G. The work of form building. This work of form building proceeds under definite laws, which are the laws of substance itself. The effect is the same for human, planetary, and solar vehicles. The different stages might be enumerated as follows. 1. The nebulous, the stage wherein the matter of the coming sheath begins to separate itself gradually from the aggregate of plain substance and to assume a nebulous or milky aspect. This corresponds to the fire mist stage in the formation of a solar system and of a planet. The Petries of the mist are then active as one of the many subsidiary groups of the three major groups. 2. The inchoate. Condensation has set in, but all is as yet inchoate, and the condition is chaotic. There is no definite form. The Petries of the chaos hold sway and are characterized by excessive energy and violent activity, for the greater the condensation prior to coordination, the more terrific are the effects of activity. This is true of gods, of men, and of atoms. Page 784. 3. The fiery. The internal energy of the rapidly congregating atoms and their effect upon each other produces an increase of heat and a consequent demonstration of the spheroidal form, so that the vehicle of all entities is seen to be fundamentally a sphere, rolling upon itself and attracting and repulsing other spheres. Petries of the fiery spheres add their labors to those of the earlier two, and a very definite stage is reached. The lunar Petries on every scheme and throughout the system are literally the active agents in the building of the dense physical body of the logos. They energize the substance of the three planes and the three worlds, the mental, the astral, and the dense physical planes of the system. This needs much pondering upon. 4. The watery. The ball or sphere of gaseous fiery essence becomes still more condensed and liquefied. It begins to solidify on its outer surface, and the ring-pass knot of each sheath is more clearly defined. The heat of the sphere becomes increased and is centralized at the core or heart of the sphere, where it produces that pulsation at the center which characterizes the sun, the planet, and the various vehicles of all incarnating entities. It is an analogous stage to that of the awakening of life in the fetus during the prenatal stage, and this analogy can be seen working out in the form building which proceeds on every plane. This stage marks the coordination of the work of the two higher groups of lunar Petries, and the Petries of the dual heat are now intelligently cooperating. The heart and brain of the substance of the slowly evolving form are linked. The student will find it interesting to trace the analogy of this, the watery stage, to the place the astral plane holds in the planetary and systemic body, and the alliance between mind and heart, which is hidden in the term Kama Manas. One of the profoundest occult mysteries will be revealed to the consciousness of man when he has solved the secret of the building of his astral vehicle and the forming of the link which exists between that sheath and the astral light in its totality on the astral plane. Page 785. 5. The etheric. The stage is not to be confined to the building of the physical body in its etheric division, for its counterpart is found on all the planes with which man is concerned in the three worlds. The condensation and the solidification of the material has proceeded till now the three groups of Petries form a unity in work. The rhythm setup has been established and the work synchronized. The lesser builders work systematically, and the law of karma is demonstrating actively, for it should be remembered that it is the inherent karma, coloring or vibratory response of the substance itself, which is the selective reaction to the egoic note. Only that substance which has, through past utilization, been keyed to a certain note and vibration will respond to the mantram and to the subsequent vibrations issuing from the permanent atom. This stage is one of great importance, for it marks the vital circulation throughout the entire vehicle of a particular type of force. This can be clearly seen in relation to the etheric body, which circulates the vital force or prana of the sun. A similar linking up with the force concerned is to be seen on the astral and the mental planes. The Petries of the triple heat are now working synthetically, and the brain, the heart, and the lower centers are coordinated. The lower and the higher are linked, and the channels are unimpeded, so that the circulation of the triple energy is possible. This is true of the form building of all entities, macrocosmic and microcosmic. It is marked by the active cooperation of another group of Petries termed the Petries of Vitality in connection with the others. Group after group cooperate, for the three main bodies are distributed among many lesser. Page 786. 6. The Solid. This marks the final stage in actual form building and signifies the moment wherein the work is done as regards the aggregating and shaping of substance. The greater part of the work of the lunar Petries stands now accomplished. The word solid refers not solely to the lowest objective manifestation, for a solid form may be ethereal, and only the stage of evolution of the entity involved will reveal its relative significance. All that has been here laid down as to the progressive stages of form construction on every plane is true of all forms in all systems and schemes, and is true of all thought form building. Man is constructing thought forms all the time, and is following unconsciously the same method as his ego pursues in building his bodies, as the logos follows in building his system, and as a planetary logos uses in constructing his scheme. A man speaks, and a very diversified mantram is the result. The energy thus generated swings into activity a multitude of little lives which proceed to build a form for his thought. They pursue analogous stages to those just outlined. At this time, man sets up these mantric vibrations unconsciously and in ignorance of the laws of sound and of their effect. The occult work that he is carrying on is thus unknown to him. Later he will speak less, know more, and construct more accurate forms which will produce powerful effects on physical levels. Thus, eventually, in distant cycles, will the world be saved, and not just a unit here and there. In connection with this building of man's sheaths, certain interesting points of manifestation occur which might be dealt with now, leaving the student to work out the correspondences in relation to the system and the planet, and giving only general indications which may be of use to him in his conclusions. Page 787. In all the work of form building, certain very vital occasions occur which concern the ego even more than the sheaths themselves, though the reflex action between the lower personal self and the higher is so close as to be well nigh inseparable. The moment wherein the ego appropriates the sheath. This takes place only after the fourth spirilla is beginning to vibrate, and the period differs according to the power of the ego over the lower self. In connection with the dense physical vehicle, an analogy can be seen when the ego ceases from his work of overshadowing and at some period between the fourth and seventh year makes his contact with the physical brain of the child. A similar occurrence takes place in connection with the etheric vehicle, the astral, and the mental. The moment wherein the energy of the ego is transmitted from one sheath to a lower one. It is often overlooked that the path of incarnation is not a quick one, but that the ego descends very slowly and takes possession gradually of his vehicles. The less evolved the man, the slower is the process. We are dealing here with a period of time which transpires after the ego has made the first move towards descent, and not with the time which elapses between two incarnations. This work of passing on to a plane for purposes of incarnation marks a definite crisis and is characterized by the exertion of the will in sacrifice, the appropriation of the substance in love, and its energizing into activity. The moment wherein the particular type of force with which any particular sheath is energized is appropriated. This brings the sheath concerned, A, under the influence of the egoic ray, B, under the influence of a particular sub-ray of the egoic ray, C, and through that influence, under certain astrological influences, under certain planetary radiations, under the influences of certain force currents emanating from certain constellations. Page 788. These three events have a very interesting analogy in connection with the work of the Logos in the construction of his physical body, the solar system, and also in certain correspondences which can be seen embodied in facts dealt with at the first three initiations. From the standpoint of the lower self, the two most vital moments in the work of the reincarnating ego are those in which the mental unit is re-energized into cyclic activity, and in which the etheric body is vitalized. It concerns that which links the center at the base of the spine with a certain point within the physical brain via the spleen. This is dealing purely with the physiological key. We might now touch upon a very interesting point concerning the dense physical body, dealing therefore with that which is not considered a principle either in the macrocosm or the microcosm. As we know, man is essentially mental man and astral man. Then the two take to themselves an etheric sheath for purposes of objective work. That is the true lower man, these two in the etheric body. But later, in order to know even on the lowest plane of all, man takes to himself a coat of skin, as the Bible expresses it, and puts on over his etheric body that outer illusory form we know so well. It is his lowest point of objectivity and his direct imprisoning. This appropriation of a dense sheath by the ego is subject to a very peculiar piece of karma connected with the four Kumaras, or heavenly men, who form the Logoic quaternary. In the schemes which concern the Logoic triad, or those of the three major rays, or heavenly men, dense physical incarnation is not the appointed lot, and man functions in his lowest manifestation in etheric matter. Page 789. This appropriation of the lowest body is distinguished in several ways from the approach to the other sheaths. For one thing, there is no permanent atom to be vitalized. The physical plane is a complete reflection of the mental. The lowest three subplanes reflect the abstract subplanes, and the four etheric subplanes reflect the four mental, concrete planes. The manifestation of the ego on the mental plane, or the causal body, is not the result of energy emanating from the permanent atoms as a nucleus of force, but is the result of different forces, and primarily of group force. It is predominantly marked by an act of an exterior force, and is lost in the mysteries of planetary karma. This is equally true of man's lowest manifestations. It is the result of reflex action and is based on the force of the group of etheric centers through which man, as an aggregate of lives, is functioning. The activity of these centers sets up an answering vibration in the three lowest subplanes of the physical plane, and the interaction between the two causes an adherence to, or aggregation around, the etheric body of particles of what we erroneously term dense substance. This type of energized substance is swept up in the vortex of force currents issuing from the centers and cannot escape. These units of force, therefore, pile up according to the energy direction around and within the etheric sheath till it is hidden and concealed, yet interpenetrating. An inexorable law, the law of matter itself, brings this about, and only those can escape the effect of the vitality of their own centers who are definitely lords of yoga and can, through the conscious will of their own being, escape the compelling force of the law of attraction working on the lowest cosmic physical subplane. End of side 2, cassette number 18, Atreides on Cosmic Fire, page 789. Continued on cassette number 19.